Psycho Man.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to episode 449 of the Motorcycle Men podcast. Hey, listen, if you are into long-distance riding with a competitive edge and maybe want to have some fun along the way and possibly meet some great people, today I will be talking with Aaron. He's of the ADV Cannonball. That's right, the Adventure Bike Cannonball. And he's here to tell us all about it, sitting here in the V-Twin Cafe in the corner booth, as always. But first, kids, before we get to that, now the Motorcycle Men podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now they're offering high quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, get on over to scorpionusa.com. And Wild Ass Seats. You can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you're tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, go to wild-ass.com and get your cushion today. Make sure you tell the real Craig Johnson that the Motorcycle Men podcast sent you on over. And I've always, boys and girls, the Tobacco Motorwear. That's right, Tobacco Motorwear, for the best in casual riding gear for men and women. There is only one place you should be going. That is Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com, and our listeners will get 10% off your order when you use the code MOTOMEN. Everyone here at the podcast is wearing tobacco gear. That's right, kids. I got that tobacco riding jeans and a California riding shirt, among other things. I love this stuff, and I won't ride without them. Hey, your safety is worth it. So get on over to Tobacco Motorwear and get in Dave's pants. All right, boys and girls, let's have that chat with Aaron and talk about the ADV Cannonball. All right, boys and girls, here we are. We're back again at the corner booth here in the V-Twin Cafe. And joining me today, all the way from, where are you, actually?
Today, I'm in Victoria, British Columbia.
Victoria, British Columbia. Oh, geez. Okay. Well, thank you very much. And we have Aaron, and Aaron's here to tell us all about the ADV Cannonball. And if you are an ADV rider, this is for you. Aaron, welcome to the show, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Thanks for taking the time.
I really appreciate it. I appreciate you taking the time, because I know you're probably extremely busy. You just, with the rally and everything, the rally just concluded, am I correct?
Yeah, and just prior to that, we had a great big ADV trip in India, and I came home for 24 hours to make sure that no one was living in my house. say hello to my wife and make sure we were still married, and she said in the affirmative that we were.
Okay.
And then I went off and started the rally. You know, when I first came up with this harebrained idea, I never really thought people would sign up. And then lo and behold, I had these two big events scheduled and people actually signed up. So I guess I better go execute on the plan.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. So before we get any further into this, why don't you tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah. My name is Aaron Poufal, and I'm the rally master of the ADV Cannonball Rally and the co-host of our little podcast, the ADV Cannonball Podcast.
Oh, okay. And tell us about your motorcycle self.
Yeah, so same old story. I'm almost 50, but when I was 16 years old, I skipped school, as you do, and I went and got the restricted motorcycle license, and immediately that afternoon I had a copy of a local paper called the Buy and Sell, and I went and bought myself, I think I spent $600 or something like this, on a CB750 Super Sport.
I think everybody owned that bike.
Yeah, the greatest bike, right? Not as great as a CBX, but we didn't have the foresight to know that that was going to be a legend.
Of
but
course,
yeah, I had that bike and here I am. I didn't kill myself. I did have a few accidents, but I survived bad decision making.
Oh, well, there you go. And what are you riding now?
Just the old man 1250 GSA.
Okay. I think it's almost like a requirement and or a staple if you're going to do ADV riding, that's what you have to ride.
Yeah, it is. And our rally is modeled after those capabilities in a rider just like me. So everything we're going to talk about today is modeled around a 1250 GSA and an old overweight guy who's in his 50s.
We don't know if that's the stereotypical ADV rider, but we're gonna find out. Okay.
Indeed.
All right. Now, tell us about the ADV Cannonball. What it is? How long has this been going on? Just go for it.
Yeah. So I just finished listening to your episode about Scooter Cannonball, which was great. And you know, this isn't the most original idea, but it is catered to the big bike ADV rider. So a Cannonball is a coast-to-coast competitive event. And similar to the Scooter Cannonball and the Motorcycle Cannonball, which both categories, they're a little sadistic because one rides scooters and the other one rides bikes that barely run. So we go from coast to coast, and we will use that term creatively as the years go on. But essentially, we ride as a group, typically around 8 days in a semi-competitive event. From one coast to the other.
Okay. Wow. It seems quite ambitious. Now, is this the first year for it?
2025 was indeed the first year.
Wow.
Hence my, I'm not really sure if anyone's going to show up. So 40 riders did show up this year. It started in Kitty Hawk. And basically, I'll just give you the framework, what a day looks like, I suppose.
Yeah.
Which is we all leave the rally hotel and we do like a TSD start. So rider one will leave 1 minute after the start time. So let's say start time's 8 a.m. Rider one would leave at 8:01 and rider five would leave at 8:05. And then the riders will go across the state on a GPX route and collect checkpoints. And this is where the friendly competition aspect comes in. So the rider can choose which checkpoints to go get. We have a proprietary app which records automatically that you've achieved it. So none of this nonsense of taking a picture with a flag or things like this.
Okay.
And riders can choose how many checkpoints, either they're paved or unpaved or extreme, and they collect those checkpoints, accumulating points, and by the way, enjoying a really great, you know, curated ride, an actual motorcycle route. And then there are bonus points for the first rider to arrive at that evening's hotel in true Cannonball spirit.
Wow. Now, well, let me ask you this. Let's start at the beginning. What cockamamie idea did you have to do this? And what inspired it?
Well, truth be told, you know, about 2 years ago, I had lost my job and I had worked for the same family for 15 years. And one of my duties for this, you know, cliche billionaire family was, not only was I their yacht captain and fixer and things like this, I organized an annual motorcycle event. And I found myself unemployed, a little wanting to go crush some miles. And I couldn't find an event, like a competitive event or semi-competitive event in North America for an ADV bike. I found lots of challenges. I went and did the Iron Butts. I did all that and I couldn't find anything that I can compete. I did do a rally in Baja, which was similar to the Cannonball, but there were some gaps in the technology and some improvements that I saw that I could make. I said, well, you know, screw it. Let's just create this event that I want to do. And it turns out there are several other people, maybe, how do you put it politely? Maybe a little as crazy as I am, who wanted to do an event like this.
All right. So the Baja Rally, that's a 6 day event. So you're inspired here to do something similar. You wanted a rally for motorcycles, but you decided to go the ADV route. Now, why just the ADV route?
So for sure, because, you know, we all have this idea of, I think we all like the romantic notion of going coast to coast. To be sure. But the country is so diverse. Well, North America, to be clear, is so diverse. Often on the East Coast, we want to do some twisty roads. We want to go through the forest, through the Appalachian Mountains. And then as we get more west, we want to go off-road. We all can't dedicate a ton of time to a project this. So we're not doing like a TAT or things like this. We want to be able to cross the country in a reasonable amount of time. And for whatever personal reason that is, whether you have a job or you have other obligations in life. So I found that 8, 10, 11 days seems to be that that secret sauce. Right. So that's kind of the motivation here is, can I develop a really great route that includes fantastic POIs, things that are of interest to riders. We want to crush some miles on twisty roads. We want to have a couple of slab days in the middle because that's unavoidable. And mm-hmm. then we want to do some really great high speed, when I say high speed, like easy to ride off-road routes in the western part of the country. And there's right. just so many of them out there to enjoy on a big bike similar to a GSA.
Oh, okay. So now let's get to the planning. How long did you plan? And this, I'm including the route in this and all the necessary components that make the rally up. How long did that take you to put together?
So it turns out this is a full-time job. So this is more work than I ever expected. As a matter of fact, I wanted to do the rally because I wanted to play motorcycles and ride motorcycles.
Yeah,
well, turns out I never ride my motorcycle anymore. So this thing has totally backfired. And even during the rally, I drive what we call affectionately the big blue whale. It's a giant sprinter van. So the whole thing has backfired. But basically, route planning starts over a year in advance.
Wow.
Talking with people like from Butler Maps. We are using other resources. Plus, I'm drawing on my experience planning private events as well. So we're using all those resources. We're planning the GPX routes. And then a few months later, we're contacting hotels. We're making those arrangements. We're planning the banquet. We are, and then we're designing checkpoints. And then we're trying to make it, you know, strategically competitive, but also achievable. So yeah, it takes over a year to plan an event like this.
And how many people are involved in the planning of this?
Well, really, it's essentially just me, but we have a bunch of volunteers.
Really?
Yeah, well, for the execution of the event, you know, let's call them voluntold volunteers.
Voluntold. I like that.
I've convinced some friends to come along, like the co-host of the podcast. You know, he does the awards banquet. We have friends that are able to help with the start line. And I hope to build that group of reliable volunteers as the years go on.
Right.
And I would love to create a bigger community besides, you know, just myself sitting in front of a laptop in my spare bedroom looking at maps all day.
So your team consists of about 11 people, you think?
I think it's less than that.
Oh,
and
really?
Actually,
okay.
During a rally, you'll find that the rally will kind of run on autopilot. So after people are confused about starting for the first day, you know, a great example is rider number one of this year. He's a retired gentleman from California. He just happened to be the first guy to sign up. Now, position number one moving forward will be a traditional ranking system. So the rider from 2025, the winner will be rider number one in 2026.
Gotcha.
But the first year I said, well, this is the first guy to give me his money. So he's number one. So, you know, rallies tend to run themselves. So the first day he's like, I'm not sure how to do the start. But by day three, he's like, come on, guys, you're number two, you're number three. We got this. So
right.
A rally will almost run itself on autopilot once people kind of figure it out.
Now, the big one, the route. How long did it take you to plan that route?
Yeah, it took a while, but I had a lot of symbology in this particular route. So in 2025, the route will change every year. But in 2025, symbolically, it started from Kitty Hawk. As we know, it's first in flight.
Mm-hmm.
And then the route concluded for a broad stroke. It concluded in one other place that Cannonball will finish, but at the Portofino Hotel in L.A. That's where they have the Cannonball Monument. So you started in the first flight, and then you finished at the traditional end to any Cannonball, which is the Portofino.
Oh, okay. Now, did you actually go out and scout the route or have people do it, or was this completely and solely just a Google Maps thing?
Yeah, so definitely not Google Maps. Google Maps and algorithms are the bane of my existence. Nothing makes my blood boil. Then someone said, well, I just planned the most twisty route. Well, that's not the secret sauce to a great motorcycle road. The answer is yes, yes, and yes. So I have ridden every one of these paved sections, and I have ridden every one of these off-road sections. However, Different people in different areas will not only confirm my crazy math that a rider will make it from one hotel to the other, we want you to get there before dark, and also with the off-road sections, just like in 2025, you know, there was a rock slide before one of the tunnels and that section was closed. There were forest fires that closed some sections. We had to deal with, which was great, by the way, we had to deal with the government shutdown, which closed a lot of sections. So to answer your question, yes, I've ridden through everything. Yes, I have people check the routes, but there is always something that comes up, and that's where the cannonball spirit comes in, is that the rule is a checkpoint, once it is issued, will always remain achievable. So in the case of, let's say, one of the there is a monument adjacent to a cemetery, it had a pile of cannonballs, and of course that has to be a checkpoint,
of course,
and it was closed. So nothing made me happier and proud to sit there and watch the tracking app and watching riders pull up to the wall of this closed area, and then watching them, in my mind, I saw them hopping over the fence and going and getting the checkpoint and coming back. I'm like, you didn't need to do that, because once something is, let's say, not necessarily lawfully achievable, you don't need it to win an award.
Right.
But if you want to go get the points, you know, that's the cannonball spirit. Go and get it. So it was really cool to watch people come to all these closed areas and make those decisions to go accumulate the points or not.
Now, I know with regard to the closed areas, were they like all state and national parks that were closed?
Yeah, it was all monuments, national parks.
Oh, yeah. So, okay.
And everyone got every checkpoint except for one. And there was a police officer on the other side of this locked gate. And one guy actually went around and found the railroad track or something and got this checkpoint. Now, to be clear, you didn't have to go get it, right? But he's just on a personal mission, decided I'm getting this checkpoint, and he went in there and got it. And it made for some great war stories. You know,
okay.
We find, you know, many people join the rally because, you know, they want to win, and it's a mission, and, you know, people enjoy, you know, riding spiritedly, but staying within the law. And then we find most people just want to be in the mix and are wearing more their tourist hat more than their competitive hat.
Wow. You know, did that guy get extra bonus points because he actually went and got the checkpoint?
He didn't get bonus points, but he did accumulate those points. You know, there are several awards people can achieve.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's the overall winner. The overall winner is the person with the most points.
Okay.
There is the Checkpoint Crusher Award, which you can achieve by getting every regular and accessible cave checkpoint. And then there's a Rough Rider Award, which is if you achieve every accessible, lawfully accessible, off-road checkpoint, and you can win that award.
Okay.
And we were really, really proud of everyone. There's one guy, he hit a mudslide and broke his foot.
Oh, boy.
Midway, he put a boot on his foot and still achieved the Checkpoint Crusher Award. He arrived like at 1 o'clock in the morning one day after getting his boot put on his broken foot. There was a gentleman who, his ADV bike didn't work, so he showed up on a 900-pound Indian bagger and got every checkpoint. Yeah, hats off to this guy.
Yeah.
You know, that was number 42. You start to assign personalities to these numbers. So it was really cool to see people have their own personal goals, whether it was just to make it to the other coast or achieve an award, or in the case of three or four guys, try to go for the overall winner award.
Right. And so it wasn't, so basically what I'm hearing, it wasn't necessary to have an ADV bike on this.
No. And for safety reasons, I have a 100% paved route because, you know, there's rain events. There's, you know, there's reasons why you may not want to do an optional off-road section. You may have been injured. You may be fatigued. You may not have a good tire on your bike anymore. So I always have a paved route that you can bypass all of the optional off-road sections. And there are, I would say, honestly, 35-40% of the riders never touch dirt. And
really?
There are riders, yeah, and there are riders that all they wanted to do was go attack that dirt. And I just also want to mention that I actually don't like a lot of the off-road routes that are available in North America. A lot of them, like some of the BDRs, they're off-road for the sake of off-road, and I never really understood that.
Right.
Whereas if I put an off-road section in ADV Cannonball, like in 2026, you know, in Colorado, you're doing Tin Cup Pass, you're doing, I think it's called Edge of the World, some switchbacks down a mountain, and then we're in Moab, and then in California, we're going over the mountains there. So if there's an off-road section of one of my rallies, it's going to be for a big payoff. It's going to be epic. It's going to be a ledge road. It's going to be something that is, wow, this is amazing. I can't believe I'm here. That's the feeling you should get every time you go off-road, in my opinion.
Yeah, I see that. Now, I'm looking at your list of riders, and I don't see Indian guy on there, but I do see somebody in a Sprinter van.
That's me. Yeah, the Sprinter van is me. And unfortunately, I thought that I would get there before everyone, but the Sprinter van was so darn slow that I never got. I always arrived around mid-pack. But number 42 is the guy on the Indian bagger. I can't remember the model number off the top of my head. But
yeah, it's not. Believe it or not, I don't see it here. It's not on the list. Yeah. Competitor number, I see 43, 41.
42, Checkpoint Crusher. His name is Jay.
Oh, okay.
And he won the Checkpoint Crusher Award. As a matter of fact, he stopped in Albuquerque to get his clutch cable repaired.
Oh, geez.
And I was waiting at the Buffalo Thunder Hilton Casino and Hotel, because I like to, you know, make sure everyone got in. Even though this is an exercise in self-reliance, I kind of want to make sure people have arrived. And, you know, here he is going to get the extreme checkpoint in Santa Fe. And I call him on a cell phone, go, what are you doing? It's like 11 o'clock at night. You just got your bike. He goes, well, I'm going to get the extreme checkpoint. I said, but there's no point to it. Like, you're not going to win. Why are you? What? No, it's there and I have to get it. I'm like, all right, bro, I understand. I'll have a cold beer waiting for you when you get here.
I wish there was a map on this on your site that I could look at, but I can't find it. So anyway, but yeah. Oh, that's great. But And the thing is, you weren't required to ride a specific motorcycle. You could ride anything, basically. And I do see that there was a lot of BMWs, of course. You got a Honda in there, and got a couple Harleys. You got a Ducati also. Yeah. Two Ducatis, actually. Suzuki. So, yeah, you had like a great mix of everything in there. The total mileage of the ride, how long was it?
Yeah, so I think this one was 3,500 miles or something like that. It's not really about mileage. It's about the time in the saddle.
Sure.
Let me just address some of the motorcycle stuff. So we had some great stories. So there was a guy showed up in a DR650 from Colorado, but his motorcycle blew up on the way there to the start
wow.
line. So he rebuilt his motorcycle on the side of the road before he even made it to the start line. There
wow.
was one gentleman, he lost his key to his BMW. So he rode his CBX to the start line. And then halfway across, he went to go pick up his key. They didn't have his key, so he just bought another motor, another GSA. So
what?
There's all these great stories. Yeah, there's all these great Cannonball Spirit stories. And across the 8 days and about 3,500 miles, there's a ton of these stories. And you see me kind of going back and forth in a timeline because I just want to share all these great stories that those Cannonball rally stories with people.
Wow. So I lost my key. I'm just going to go buy another bike.
Well, he was there in the dealership. He's like, where's my key? Because he ordered one. You know, I've lost the key also. And they said it would be there on Tuesday or whatever day it was. He shows up and he goes, no, man, that's not here. He goes, what am I going to do? He goes, I don't want to keep riding my CBX. Ah, screw it. Give me another bike. So, and then the day that this is number 40. So he picked it up. He was a day behind. He rode for 12 hours straight.
Oh, boy.
Arrived at 1 o'clock in the morning. And we actually made a social media post about it. Because I walked out in the morning and I go, holy crap, this guy actually showed up. And he finished the rally. And I think, I think he wore that story like a badge of honor. And we don't have a a prize for a second prize, but we do have a symbolic set of steak knives.
A symbolic set.
Yeah, if you know, you're either winning or you have steak knives. So we actually awarded him the Spirit of Cannonball Award.
Oh, that's funny.
It can't pay for the cost of a brand new bike.
Of course not. No.
But you know, he can put that on his bookshelf and have a fond memory.
Oh, sure. How many miles per day was everybody doing? I realize it's not about the miles, but just it's a matter of curiosity for your average
rider.
Yeah,
that's a great question. So through some of the paved and really twisty sections, the mileage will be as low as 350 miles. In the middle of the country, it's my theory, let's get off those side roads, let's just go on the highway, and let's knock those miles out. So that was a 750-mile day.
Okay, doable.
But in all those examples, if you rode, you know, spiritedly, you got in before dark.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it was about being in the saddle all day, but being achievable, and we make sure that that is something that anyone on a bigger ADV bike will be able to achieve. But the guy in the 650, you know, DR650 also got in at a reasonable hour. So as long as you're, as long as you can do the speed limit, you will tend to make it in before dark.
So now this route that you give everybody gets the GPX file. And they can use it on whatever GPS that they're using, system that they have. I assume that I was watching the movie, which isn't released yet, but I was watching it, and I see a lot of guys had more than one GPS on their bike.
And oh, yeah. This is an exercise in geekiness.
Sure. So, Falco your bike, right?
That's right. So there are different riders. So you have the rider who just wants to follow the recommended GPX route,
right,
and just go for a ride. And the checkpoints are set up that you will achieve some checkpoints. And then you have the rider who's like, I have a plan, I'm not telling anyone, and I'm not following GPX file, and I'm going to custom make a GPX route based on what I think is the most efficient way of getting all the checkpoints.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, hey, now
yeah,
wait
well,
a minute.
This is the competition point. This is the competition portion of it, right? Is you only get the checkpoints and GPX files, and it's up to you to figure out how to achieve that.
Oh, see, that's going to be my next question. I was going to ask you. So now, it's not so much the specific route they have to follow, it's the checkpoints they have to get to. How they get there is up to them.
Correct. However, I do want everyone to have a great riding experience. So
sure.
I have put the checkpoints strategically that you will, by default, no matter what you're doing, you will ride this great motorcycle route. It will force you through, you know, this really great mountain pass, or it will force you through this really great area.
Now what about the bonus points? They, from what I saw a little bit in the movie, those bonus points are off the beaten path.
Yeah, so we call those extreme checkpoints.
Okay.
So you want to make sure that you have enough time in the day to go get those extra 21 points. And those are often, well, in 2025, they weren't too extreme. But there were people out there getting them, whether you needed them or not. And they're always in really cool spots. In 2026, we'll also have additionally an extreme off-road checkpoint. So we will, you know, dial up the difficulty a little bit if you choose to go get those. And then we also have bonus points for the first person to arrive at the hotel each night. So this is where that interesting strategy comes into place, is that do I go get that extreme checkpoint that's 21 points, or am I going to go for the 25 points that is the first to arrive bonus? Or am I halfway through the day and I've noticed someone's kind of given up and they've gone to the hotel, or someone is going to go get that first to arrive bonus and they're skipping the last two checkpoints? So it's really fun and entertaining to watch people's strategy in which extreme or bonus checkpoints they're gunning for.
Now you're watching these guys. You're watching every one of them on the internet through their Spotwalla account, I suppose, or whatever. You're just watching everybody on this route, right? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. So we exactly had a Spotwalla page, but we're discontinuing that. So I have a custom-made Android and iOS app And I was a little hesitant because it's my app. But in that app, it has tracking.
Okay.
So the only prerequisite for joining the rally is that you have to have a phone dedicated for tracking.
Okay.
Any kind of competitive rally, I don't know if you watch Dakar or things like this, they have like a big box that's
I know.
So rather than the big box in the tower, which costs you thousands of dollars to rent, I just have an app, and you have to get an old, I always recommend an old iPhone, and it sits on your handlebars.
Right.
So that has a tracking feature to it, and it's in real time. So every second, it's refreshed every second, as opposed to Spot Wallet that's refreshed every 20 to 30 minutes.
Oh.
So I was able to see them in real time, and it was, you know, total tracker junkie. I'm sitting in the van. Sometimes I had to pull over. I'm like, what is this guy doing? He seems to be racing this guy to go somewhere. I was like, I think that guy gave up and he's just going to the hotel because he's on the, you know, I-10 or something, right? So it was endlessly entertaining watching everyone, you know, work their way through the day. And as weather conditions changed and people got flat tires, and it was really heartwarming also to see like the two front runners. They were out doing some crazy stuff late at night, and they were riding together. It was really cool to see people on that tracking app, and that's available for the public to observe every rally. And there's also a leaderboard, a real-time leaderboard component to that page as well.
Oh, wow. You know, if this gets picked up by those dudes out in Vegas, man, this could be like a whole thing. People would be betting on dudes.
That is a great idea. We need to call up the casino immediately.
Yeah, there's that big thing out in Vegas, and they bet on everything, and they have it up on a big screen and all that. What is that? I can't remember what that's called, but yeah.
Well, any of the competitive events, you can bet on anything if it's going to be heads or tails. So why not bet on right. You know, if number 42 is actually going to make it to the finish line.
Yeah, dude, oh my god, that'd be awesome. Well, maybe not, I don't know. So how many checkpoints were these people hitting each day?
Yeah, that's also a great question. So there was over 100 checkpoints that were available.
Oh crap, really?
Yeah. And
please tell me they were all fun.
Most of them are fun and interesting. They're more what I would call a POI, point of interest. However, some of them just were there to force you on the route.
Right.
Because I wanted you to go see something super cool. Like I wanted you to go through, you know, Los Alamos, or I wanted you to go, you know, through something like that, something that was interesting. Some were in really, you know, you should go see this. Like there was an extreme checkpoint that was on a low water bridge. So if the water was low enough, the checkpoint was dry. If the water was high, and if you wanted to, you'd have to ride your bike across this flooded bridge, right?
So, oh no.
Yeah, some of them were really interesting and some of them were mundane. But those are the different riders. You had the riders that came who just wanted to go for a ride and hang out with like-minded people, and everyone had positive things to say about the routes. And some of the checkpoints were like, yeah, that was crazy. It was on this old abandoned railway bridge, and you know, that was really interesting. Or in our case, you know, that park was closed and it was really cool to see someone on the tracking app. In my mind's eye, I could see them ride up to the closed gate and I could see them making a decision. Well, I see the walking path and you can see them ride down the walking path. It was really cool to watch people get those interesting checkpoints.
So some of these checkpoints, some of these checkpoints, they actually had to get off their bike and get to the checkpoint.
There was one or two that, you know, there was a payoff, right? I'm never going to make you do something that's not interesting. So for instance, the final extreme checkpoint was on the pier. I forget which pier it is, but it's where the end of Route 66 is.
Oh yeah, Santa Monica Pier, right?
Santa Monica Pier, right? Yeah. So you had to park your bike and go and do that. I only did that twice. I only made people get off their bike twice. You know, we don't want to be, you know, be cheesy about it,
right? Yeah, there was one in, I think there was one in Tennessee or North Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. And that is on the edge of a cliff, and there's a really big payoff being able to see this great view. So I'm only going to make you get off your bike if it's worthwhile.
Oh. As far as it goes for, and you were part of this, so you know like the fuel stops and you know the range of these bikes. Did this route put them in any situation where they had to really, really plan based on their fuel usage?
Yeah, that's also a great question. So we don't provide that information. That's kind of our strategy. But, you know, this is America, right? And like I said, this is designed for a big ADV bike. So nobody ran out of gas. However, I did notice some of the smaller bikes, they were adding in their checkpoint routing. They were routing in fuel stops. But I think the lion's share, everyone just knew that there's going to be fuel available. And if you have a big GS or GSA, you know, you have the range, right?
Yeah, do you hope.
It's not like an extreme rally like the Alcan 5000 where there's rules never pass a fuel station and carry extra fuel. But everyone had different strategies, and it was really cool to see people follow that core tenet of self-reliance, and you just figure it out. And that's the fun of it.
Yeah, but you know, it's like, if you do those off-road sections, that's going to severely affect your gas mileage.
Yeah, for sure. And and depending on weather.
Oh, yeah. So
this year, we were really, really unlucky. We had a lot of rain, and it was really greasy. So, you know, someone thought that they were going to rip through that 30 miles of off-road in, you know, an hour. And 2 hours later, no one's out of there yet. And I got pictures of, I've dropped my bike twice today. I'm like, because you had the wrong tires. And, you know, that's part of the fun, too, is dealing with weather, dealing with the off-road sections, whether you choose to do it or not. You know, we're all adults here. You can choose to do something or not. You know, the great discussions of which tires should I use, because there's a lot of road, but there's some off-road. Like, it's such a fun thought experiment just to prepare for this. And then when you go to execute it, you're like, that didn't go as planned.
Wow. Now let's talk about, as far as, how many, you know, you said 40 riders started?
Yeah, 40 riders started. We only had two DNFs.
Really?
They chose not to, to continue. Everyone who finished was super positive, and I think everyone had a sense of accomplishment as we, all shared a beer, at the Portofino Hotel.
Oh, so what does a winner get? A big cash box? Or just,
yeah, they get something really important, which is bragging rights.
That's it. You just busted your ass for 8 days, and congratulations.
Yeah, we have a perpetual trophy, a great big cup that their name gets, you know, emblazoned on the side.
Yeah,
of that.
Okay.
Everyone gets an actual physical medal that goes around your neck. I think finishing is an accomplishment, so everyone who finishes gets a medal, and then everyone gets a physical glass trophy mailed to them after the event. Anyone who has achieved any of those Checkpoint Crusher or the Rough Rider awards.
Oh, okay. Now, of all the riders who finished, was there any one particular remarkable story that you heard from any one of them?
Yeah, everyone had their reasons for entering.
Yeah.
But one of the gentlemen said that he recently, he's an older gentleman, he's in his 60s, and he recently survived heart surgery. And he kind of went through the same journey I went through, is that I was looking around for something to do. I kind of had a life event, and I had my motorcycle, and I wanted to go do something. And he was searching around for something to do. And during the awards banquet, he says, you know, I'm really happy I did this. I had my second lease on life, and I met all these great riders, and I have a sense of accomplishment. And those are the stories that that you really take away as fuel to plan the next year.
Oh, so now, speaking of next year, that you said those words, the 2026 Cannonball is set already.
Yeah, it's set. We're going to have one small change, because there's hotels are sometimes hard to book. There's one small change, but it's not a big deal. It's again 8 days. This time, because everyone asked for it, it's going to be longer. It's going to be 4,000 miles. Hey, they asked for it.
Wow.
I'm like...
Maybe they wanted it longer in days, not necessarily in miles.
No, and it will. I have plans for 2027.
We'll get into that.
I have plans for 2027 that it will be a more northern route, and it will be 10 or 11 days. And in the future, I want it to go, you know, from Newfoundland to Alaska. I want to get really crazy. But anyways, for 2026, it's 8 days. It's 4,000 miles. Symbolically, we're leaving from Plymouth Rock. We're going to rip through the New York Catskills region. And we're going to go through the Appalachians on day two. Day five, it gets really interesting. We have the separation between the paved and unpaved sections through Colorado, some epic passes in Colorado. And then we hit the trails in Moab. Day six and seven, we rip through Death Valley and the Sierra Nevada range.
Wow.
And my fingers are crossed that the closed section of the Pacific Coast Highway will reopen. And then we end in Monterey and we have our big awards banquet.
There you go. I see that with the 2026, you're passing through Las Vegas, and that's so you can check on how the betting is going, right?
Yeah, listen, we got to check and see if, you know, we need to slow someone down or speed someone up, maybe rig the bet. You know, I'm losing money in this first year of the rally, so maybe through this great plan you and I have, we can
do that. You never know. speaking of money, how much does it cost to enter the rally?
Yeah, so we're just going to make it super simple. We're going to follow the model of the Scooter Cannonball.
Okay.
So moving forward, you pay your $1,000 entry fee. That gets you the GPX files. It gets you the app. It gets you the awards banquet, your awards. And then I provide everyone with a Hilton Hotels booking link, and you get the deeply discounted hotel booking link. So when you sign up with us, we'll send you an email. Click, click, click. Sign up for you. You pay for all your hotels.
Right.
If you want to have a roommate, or you know, you want to have your own room, that's up to you. So we'll have 50 hotel rooms available at the discount, and then after that, you're kind of just on your own.
On your own, yeah.
If you're late to the party.
Ah. Now, how many people have signed up for 2026?
We have only 1, 2, 3, 4. We have about 8 or 9 people signed up already. Most of those, 11 people. Most of those are people from last year. We have a few newcomers, but I think we just concluded our first rally. I think the community just wanted to make sure that I wasn't a crackpot and I was going to run off with their money. We had a special guest, Robert Bollinger. He's a formerly Nomad Sweden. He's a YouTuber. He just finished editing the 1.5-hour motion picture that will drop sometime in November. So I think when people see the film and see the great feedback and see what a success 2025 was, people will sign up for 2026.
Let's hope. Man, that's going to be great. Let's briefly dive into 2027. You got one in Europe? It's going to be held in Europe?
Yeah, so I need to have 2 events a year simultaneously to make this, you know, fiscally responsible and not a giant pit that I shovel money into. So at the end of this year, I shipped my motorcycle out of the port of LA, and that's going to Europe. So I've done a lot of riding and private tours in Europe.
Yeah.
So starting in 2027, I'm not going to tell you the route yet, but because I don't know it. But there will be a Cannonball annually starting in 2027 in Europe. So that may be, you know, from, you know, Denmark to Gibraltar, or from France to Istanbul,
right,
or from the tip of the UK to the foot of the UK. It will always be in a Cannonball spirit.
Yeah.
And it will always follow the same framework on and off road. And we'll always be kind of coast to coast ish.
Oh, at the same time, you just said that there is going to be a 2027 Cannonball in the U.S.
Yeah. So simultaneously, every riding season, there'll be 2 Cannonballs. There'll be, ADV Cannonballs. There'll be 1 in North America and there'll be 1 in Europe.
So you're sadistic is what you're saying. It's like you're subjecting yourself to all this
I want to sit in front of my computer for 20 hours a day. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Now, have you already, you've already planned 2026. That's already set and ready to go, right?
That is, yeah. We haven't issued the checkpoints yet. Checkpoints get released 30 days prior to the event.
Oh.
But in broad strokes, the route is pretty much set in stone, except for one small hotel change.
Well, I'm surprised that you released the checkpoints 30 days in advance. I thought you would do something like the day before.
Yeah, and you know, I have really strong opinions about this because I've done a lot of big TSD rallies and I can't stand tricks. I can't stand, if you were here last year, you know how to handle this year. I think there's a lot of joy. There's there's about half the guys that enjoy the planning aspect of a rally. I think they like choosing their routes, thinking about the strategies and should I skip this one and get that one and maybe go for this. And I really enjoy that academic study and programming your GPSs. I don't want people messing around with their GPSs when they're ripping down the highway.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I want you to
have
your eyes up. I want you to have a plan. Whether the plan is just to go for a ride and, you know, hang out and follow the GPX, or your plan is to precisely execute checkpoints in a strategic way because you want to win. Whatever your strategy is, I want you to have a plan. I don't want your head trying to figure out how to use your GPS. As a matter of fact, the GPX routes are already out there. So if you want to go ride the whole route, or if you want to practice following a GPX file, you can do that right now.
Oh, nice.
I want people to have fun, and I don't want it to be a frustrating thing for you.
Oh, yeah, because I know there has been in the past a lot of rallies or even motorcycle events where you have to do X amount in 24 or 48 hours, and you don't get the GPX file until the day you arrive. You know, so it's like, how do you plan what you're going to do? You know, so your way of doing it 30 days in advance kind of makes a lot of sense, you know?
Yeah, and I think people enjoy that. I think people like thinking about it. I think it extends the event to like a month long or two months long deal. People get on our forums and they're talking about it, and nothing makes me happier than, well, Aaron, I'm just going to get all the checkpoints and be the first to arrive and get the bonus and kick everyone's ass. And then that guy, of course, misses four checkpoints. He made a mistake. He's got a flat tire. He forgot to bring repair kit. It is endlessly entertaining for those 30 days to hear all the different strategies, which, by the way, you know, everyone's got a plan till it makes contact with the enemy, right? So, and the enemy being the road and the environment and your motorcycle. So it is endlessly entertaining to hear the strategies and watch them fall apart day one.
There's this saying, I know where it came from, but it says, if you want to hear God laugh, tell him your plans.
Exactly. I think Mike Tyson also said it good. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face,
right? That's true. Now, what do people do about food on this? I mean, they're obviously not provided food, so.
But I always negotiate with Hilton. They're being a great partner. We always negotiate that I think every hotel's giving us breakfast, whether that's. We try to stay in like Hilton Garden Inns and DoubleTrees, or just a little bit nicer.
Yeah.
And sometimes they have like a bar in the thing. So we try to make sure that we have breakfast. People are just eating on the road. There's no time to, well, you can if you want. You can go to a restaurant if you want. And then at night, we always have the recommended restaurant on the schedule. So that usually becomes the meeting place to trade war stories.
Yeah.
And all the things. But people just come in and out at different times. There's no way to arrange that. But at our banquet, we always have a big buffet. We have a pub menu. And we usually have sushi or something like that. And it's a cash bar because there's no way I'm paying the bar bill of these degenerates.
Oh,
right?
No. So. What is the general mood of anybody that comes in at the end of the day? I'm sure you've seen these people when they're arriving. Do they look like they just crawled out of a pit? You know, and they're just beat to hell.
There are as many personalities as there are motorcycles. And one thing I've learned is if someone's having a bad day and their blood sugar's low and they're pissed off about something that happened on the road or the pizza wasn't good in the hotel, he's going to be your best friend the next day. Just let it go.
We
have the guys that are coming in on one wheel and they're like, this was effing amazing. That was great. Am I the first to arrive? And then you have the guy that pulls in and go, I think I've achieved every checkpoint in sequential order and I'm here on time and I'm going to bed. So everyone is dramatically different. And
yeah,
I think by the end at the awards banquet, it's really cool to put names to numbers and faces and get to know all those different personalities. But at the end, we're definitely all a little closer. Yeah. To be sure.
Now, let me ask you this. So during this year's event, here you are cruising along in your stylish sprinter van. All right. And you're watching all these guys riding. How many times did you say to yourself, damn it, I wish I was riding?
All day. The damn van is so slow. It's driving me crazy, but it was so entertaining that there were times I'm like, I got to pull over. So there were times where I pulled over and I was doing what's called field notes. I have a little recording device I would you know, ramble into. So the whole time I'm like, I really want to be on my bike. So it's my hope, I think I mentioned earlier, that we have a good group of volunteers moving forward. And I would love 1 year for someone to drive the van and I can at least 1 or 2 days, you know, get out there and ride, because the routes really are fun.
Yeah.
And it's a shame I wasn't able to ride this year.
Would it be unethical for you to participate in the...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But why?
No, you're right. But the number one thing I combat is the bloody gossip and complaining. So rule number one in the regulations is don't be an ADV weenie. And in the glossary of terms, an ADV weenie, and I'm paraphrasing here, is someone who is sitting in front of their keyboard. Well, technically, the air pressure of a GSA is 42 PSI. Like, that's not the guy we want, right?
Yeah, who cares?
Right. And then rule number two is, and most importantly, if you're considering complaining or making a complaint to the rally master or point out someone else's creative interpretation of the rules, refer to rule number one.
Exactly. So don't be a weenie. But
don't be a weenie.
Don't be an ADV weenie is great, but that does not exclude you from participating.
That's true. Just be positive when you get to the hotel, you know, and if there are very few people in this type of rally that are really competing for the overall winner.
Right.
And that is obvious by halfway through day one.
Yeah.
That's why I firmly believe in, all joking aside, ride your own ride.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you can choose to go get the Checkpoint Crusher Award and you do that on your own terms. And it's simply a solitary mission. You're going out there on your own to collect those checkpoints. And then we meet you at the hotel and we trade stories and, you know, we have a beer and we work on your bike and things like that.
Yeah.
But if you're not gunning for the first position, don't worry about what those guys are doing. But it is fun to kind of be in the mix and, you know, hear all the war stories. But concentrate on riding your own ride. Go for your own goals, whether that's just finishing or achieving one of the available awards.
Right. Damn. One more question, but then we'll move on to something else. How are people getting their bikes to the start and home from the finish?
Yeah, that's another great question. So they're all individual stories. I move some of those bikes for a small fee. I offer like a white glove service where I literally drop your bike off at
the... Damn, you do everything.
Well, I got to pay for that damn van somehow, right? But, you know, it's really heartwarming to see people saying, well, I talked to this guy from North Carolina, and after the rally, we're riding home together. And maybe we're going to take the 2026 route home, right? So it's really cool to see those relationships develop. And we have a WhatsApp group that's actually still running. And there are people just today, it's now October 28th, actually just yesterday, that just got home yesterday. So they took the long way home and we're all still communicating. And, you know, we found out the guy who broke his foot, we just found out yesterday on that group chat that his bike is a full write-off. The insurance company is going to write it off.
No way.
Yeah, so it's really cool to... And that guy with the broken foot, by the way, rode his bike home with his broken foot. Thank goodness it was his right foot. So everyone has their story about getting to the starter line, and everyone has their own story about getting home.
Yikes. Oh, that's awesome. Wow. So let's detour just a little bit. Tell us about the Motorcycle Book Club and the Motorcycle Film Club.
Yes, and I need to get your book on there. It's in my queue.
Oh, thank you.
On my Audible queue. And when I get back into Big Blue Whale, I'm sorry I haven't got to it, but I will get to it and we'll include you with that. You know, we really like to support authors. I'm really, I really admire the work that it takes for authors to actually sit down and you know, do that art and put a book out. And I'm always thankful for that. So I've been, you know, talking with authors, maybe Ted Simon. I spent his last birthday with him in the South.
Oh, really? Good for you. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really rarefied air to sit with him. Whether it's, you know, other authors like Elizabeth Beard, she's been a special guest at one of our private rallies. So I try to promote authors and also filmmakers on these two pages that I have at advcannonball.com. And that's always growing. So if anyone has anything to contribute, you can just reach out and we can support our artists in our community.
Excellent. Now, how can people learn more about the ADV Cannonball and perhaps even sign up for it?
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be great. Got to pay for that damn van.
That damn van. By the way, it's $100,000 for a Sprinter van.
Get out of here, really?
How is that reasonable?
Well, what the hell do you got in it?
Well, everything, right?
Everything. Well, there you go.
The order list, like, surely I need seats that turn around so I can, you know, look at the motorcycle
right
at night because I can't afford a hotel room.
Let me ask you, is it carpeted and have a bathroom?
No.
Oh, so you didn't go that far.
No, it's just the empty cargo van. As a matter of fact, during the rally, I sleep in the Sprinter van while everyone else is in their king size bed.
Get out of here. So you don't have...
Because I can't afford it, but B, so I can keep an eye on everyone's bikes for them.
Oh, geez. You know, you should have just got a Class B and been done with it.
Well, that's more money.
Well, you know. You just have to have more rallies. That's right.
So people can learn more in all social media. Our handles are at ADV Cannonball. In about a week when this episode drops, you'll be able to go to YouTube and watch the motion picture. And to sign up and more information, go to advcannonball.com.
All right. Excellent. Any closing words about the ADV Cannonball and advice to those who are considering participating?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we all have different reasons for entering, as we talked about. And just to kind of reiterate that is, it is a friendly competition. That's a motivation on a lot of people. Some people sign up just because they want to ride a really great curated motorcycle route. And some people just want to sign up because they want to ride with a group across the country and, you know, maybe make some new friends and ride with a like-minded group with similar bikes.
Yeah.
But a core tenet of the rally is self-reliance. And, you know, we also joke about being a badass and, you know, we do that on purpose because we want to empower people. And there's nothing more rewarding than seeing some guys with some trepidation at the beginning of the rally. And by the time they're done, they're like high-fiving and they're hanging out and they have a sense of empowerment. So, you know, that's really the mission here is, you know, for all the scuttlebutt about cannonballs just racing across country, that's not really everyone's motivation.
Yeah.
Everyone has an individual motivation for joining our rally and everyone's welcome.
Oh, okay. All right. Before we close out, tell us about your podcast.
Listen, your podcast has been around for a long time. Ours was the genesis was, you know, we know all these interesting people from the private rallies that we used to put on. So we've had, like I said, Ted Simon and Elsbeth Beard and Charlie Borman and, you know, Austin Vince. So we've had some great people, but mainly it was a place to, when people want to sign up, they could get to know me and the co-host. They could get to know that we're real people. They could get information about the rally. And it's kind of a bipolar podcast because it doesn't have an identity, whether it's you want to listen to interesting stories or hear us talk about our recent trip to India or riding motorcycles in Japan, or if it's just to get the latest rule changes that are coming up in the next ADV Cannonball. But it's a bit of a schizophrenic place for people to hang out.
Okay, excellent. Aaron, listen, you've been absolutely great. I've totally enjoyed this. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Well, thanks very much for having me. It was an honor to be on an actual podcast.
Well, thank you very much, sir. Don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you when we're done. And listen, you take care. I'm looking forward to the 2026.
Again, thanks for having me.
The Motorcycle Men podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. If you would like to help and be a part of something that makes a difference, donate today to David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. Go to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate. Links will also be in the show notes. And the Gold Star Ride Foundation, helping families of fallen soldiers and making a difference in the lives of those left behind. If you'd like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, go to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. Hey, thanks for joining me and Aaron here in the V-Twin Cafe, where he told us all about the ADV Cannonball. Now, you can learn more about the ADV Cannonball by getting on over to advcannonball.com. Hey, links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Men website at motomenpc.com. Don't forget to get on over to the Ride with Ted YouTube channel and watch some of the many videos I have there. If you would please also like and subscribe, that would be a tremendous help to the channel and, of course, to the podcast. New videos are coming. It's been a trip. Hey, don't forget to get your copy of my book, The Road Most Traveled, now direct from me on the Motorcycle Men website, and you can save nearly $8. Of course, it's still available on Amazon, and you can get the audiobook on Audible, but you can still get it from me if you want, and if you want, I'll even sign it. All right, kids, for the rest of the Motorcycle Men team, thanks for listening. And remember, boys and girls, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. All right, safety, kids.